KDS listeners, welcome back to Instant Classic with Pop Rock,
DJ Mocha,
and Avalanche.
Yeah, so today is a very exciting day because we're going to be talking about Juno and 8th grade. I have seen both of these movies.
I have seen Juno. I have not seen 8th grade.
And I had seen 8th grade, but not Juno.
Yes, so let's jump right in. Hope everyone's having a great Wednesday.
Okay, so we're going to do a little synopsis for Juno. When precocious teen Juno McGuff, played by Elliot Page, becomes pregnant, she chooses a failed rock star... She chooses a failed rock star and his wife to adopt her unborn child. Complications occur when Mark, the prospective father, begins viewing Juno as more than just the mother of his future child, putting both his marriage and the adoption in jeopardy.
Yes, so any... Avalanche, you can start since you've never seen this movie.
All right, well, I'd never seen the movie before. I thought it was really cute. I thought it was, you know, it's a movie that anyone can enjoy. And I think it has... It's really silly at times, but it has a lot of serious undertones for sure.
Yeah, I've seen like a lot of quote unquote discourse about like the dialogue, but like I feel like it works because they hit you with these like cheesy like sayings, but then like a minute later they're talking about like really deep things like abortion and like I don't know, family in general. Oh yeah, and the following views presented in this hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California.
Okay, I think... Okay, we're going to start with a little information about the movie. The writer was Diablo Cody, director Jason Reitman, and where do we know him from?
Well, actually, I've never seen anything else he's made, I don't think, except Juno, but... He has directed Saturday Night, which I'm very excited to go see. It's based on, like, the first, live Saturday Night Live in, like, 1970s. And then the writer, Diablo Cody, also wrote Jennifer's Body and Lisa Frankenstein, which are both amazing movies.
Oh, I didn't know he wrote Jennifer's Body.
Yes, like, cult classics.
And the movie did really well. Its budget was $6.5 million, and ultimately, its global box office was $231 million worldwide. So, this little movie really was super successful.
And it's also interesting because, like, Michael Cera and Elliot Page, they were kind of just like, oh, whatever, like, it seems, like, cool. They, like, had no prediction of, like, how it was going to take off, but... I mean, I love this movie. I've watched it, like, embarrassingly, I've watched it, like, probably 6 times. Just because, like, I don't know, it's, like, so comforting. Just, like, with the visuals and, I don't know, it's like they're in this whole, like, little world.
No, and I think J.K. Simmons is perfect as the dad. Like, actually perfect. Because he's kind of, he's stern, but he's also not... It's such a fine line that he creates.
I think one of my favorite things was when she told them she was pregnant, and then like the subsequent way they reacted was so calm and normal, and maybe it's not the most realistic, but it really worked for the movie. And I feel like it kept this like lighter tone to the movie, so it wasn't
like, I'm gonna kill you, like...
Right, and it didn't make it about, like, the pregnancy and, like, her parents being mad about it. Yeah. It was more, like, herself,
It was nice to see her, like, immediately supported in that way. And also, like, how she says, like, I don't really know what kind of girl I am. Like, she's so young, and she's just, like, figuring things out. And I don't know, it's really touching.
You know, and there's definitely a lot of stigma around teen pregnancy, and I think it's actually not the best thing in the world because it makes people who fall into it super insecure and they feel super like ashamed sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I think the way this movie portrays it is the way it should be dealt with, honestly.
And like the ultrasound scene, there's like a scene in the movie where she's like getting an ultrasound and the ultrasound technician is like, thank God, like you're putting up this baby for adoption. Which is like so out of hand, like out of pocket.
I
like,
thought that doctor was crazy.
Shout out to Juno's stepmom for defending her and just being a real one, because that was so out of line and so out of pocket. And the way she just stepped up and was like, because, you know, from the movie, like prior, like she was, they had a very contentious relationship, but she was like, I'm not going to let anyone insult my child.
I think it's funny though, because every time her parents defend her, they insult her first.
Yeah. That's so true. But like, I feel like that's so realistic.
Absolutely.
But also I do want to note that ultrasound scene was like taken from real life.
Yeah. I saw it was based on real events.
Yeah. I forget. I think it was Diablo Cody's like friend or something, right?
Yeah, it's the the ultrasound footage was from one of the crew. The crew members' wives.
Those are the stigmas that are dealt with. Like, these kids are like, they're kids, and they're like, I don't know how to explain it. I don't know.
I think I wanted to ask you guys about what you thought of the relationship between Juno and Mark. Mark being the adoptive father that Juno would be giving her baby to.
I mean, obviously it's icky.
so icky.
But I do think it's like completely on him. Like, he's just icky. Like, and also I like really do not like him. He's like the definition of like a man child. Like, when you look that up in the dictionary, that like is a picture of his face.
No, when they started dancing together, I was like, what is happening right now?
I think he just like, he was older and I think he was really envious of Juno. He saw her life and how it was just starting, and he saw his life and he was like, well, how did I get here?
He definitely feels unaccomplished.
Yes, and he have conducted himself that way.
And I feel like this is so like reflected in like just how he holds himself, and like also like the costume design, I guess. Like, he's always wearing these like band like something you would see like a teenage boy wearing, and like his music room is like filled with posters from like his childhood like music taste, I guess. I don't know, it's interesting.
I guess it kind of links to his immaturity. I didn't really take note of the costume design, but now that I'm thinking about it, it definitely was designed that way. Also, Soo-Chin, I thought she was funny.
Soo-Chin! Oh, babies want to get born! She, I think, was in the movie for 30 seconds, and yet...
Like, one of my favorite characters.
She stole the whole show. Yeah.
Like, God thanks you for your miracle or something.
Yeah. Like, it's just, the movie's so funny.
And, yeah, like, all the side characters, like, even if they're in it for, like, a little bit, they feel so developed somehow. Right. Like, even her friend Leah, like, I don't know, she was, like, an icon to me. Like, the fashion was so good. So good. And just, like, the way they, like, converse with each other is, like, so entertaining. Mm-hmm.
I feel like Elliot Page did a very good job of portraying a 16-year-old and the way a 16-year-old would carry herself.
For sure.
And just the slouching and the comments and maybe saying things when she shouldn't. It was kind of refreshing.
It's super impulsive, which is very real. And I actually expected her to get more attached to the unborn child than she did.
Yeah.
She really just seemed like she wanted to do what was best for it.
And like that also brings us into Jennifer Garner, our sweetie angel, who we watched 13 Going on 30 2 weeks ago, if you missed that show. We just love her here. She's great.
She's the best.
Her character, I could talk about for so long. I don't know, like, when she was like, I was like born to be a mother, and like, and she just like follows through with what she wants in life, and she's not like ashamed of that. Like, I feel like there's sometimes this idea that women like either need to fit into like the motherly role, or they have to like be the exact opposite. But I feel like she just like embraced what she wanted in life, like despite any other like external pressure.
And I really feel like her character grounded the movie in a lot of chaos. And
That's true.
Because it was her and Juno in the quiet moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually. You're right. It always was.
God, when she gave her that note, I was like, I'm in if you're in. Mm-hmm. Oh, like my heart. And she like hung it up in the baby's room.
Yeah.
Too good. Yeah, like ultimately this is just like, this is a movie about like womanhood in very, like in various stages of life, you know?
Also, what's Michael Cera doing trying to be a star high school athlete?
Oh, we didn't even talk about Michael Cera yet.
Yes, I love Michael Cera. He's such a little, like, cutie. Like, I don't know, he seems, like, very, like tall, but, like, I feel like I want to, like, hold him in my hands. Like,
He had so many quirks, like the Tic Tacs.
Yeah. Oh, the Tic Tacs. I love orange Tic Tacs, guys.
He's such a sweetie in the movie. He never, like, got mad at her. He just, like, supported her whatever she wanted, which is amazing.
Yeah, and when Juno was upset about not being asked to prom, he was like, you broke my heart first.
Yeah,
It's just two kids, and they're so adorable together. Yeah. And, you know, they both want to be with each other, mm-hmm. but, like, they're pushing each other away, and it was just very cute.
Yeah.
I also love the scene. I don't even know when this was in the movie, but there's a point where Juno is like, Polly is actually great in chair. Which is funny because they literally like did the deed like on a chair that they like picked up off the street.
Oh, I think this is when her dad was shocked that
Polly's
the one that got her pregnant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. he was very surprised Polly could do it.
But I don't think like anyone else could have done that role except Michael Cera. Like he is so perfect.
No, he is. It's the perfect amount of dorkiness and also some of the quotes in this movie are crazy. Like
so many quotes.
I liked excuse me, I'm a sacred vessel, all right? All you've got in your stomach is Taco Bell.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I love that. And also they were talking about like I don't even know what they're talking about, but Michael Cera, he says, like, the Blair Witch Project was coming on Stars.
Oh, my God, yes.
Polly knew that Juno had more important things to do. My other favorite one, we talked about this scene, was Juno's stepmom saying, doctors are sadists who like to play God and watch lesser people scream.
That's crazy.
That was also crazy. Very good.
Yes. God. Okay, any wrap-up thoughts on Juno? I don't know. Overall, I love this movie, and I would completely recommend it.
Yeah, super good coming-of-age story that anyone can watch.
Also, the soundtrack is really good.
Yes.
It's very unique, I guess, but it, like, works really well with the movie and everything.
Okay, I think we can move on to our next movie, which is Eighth Grade, written and directed by Bo Burnham, put out by A24, and this is also a movie that had a low budget and did very well. Mm-hmm. The budget was $2 million and ultimately made $13.5 million at the domestic box office, which is very good. The synopsis is, 13-year-old Kayla, played by Elsie Fisher, endures the tidal wave of contemporary suburban adolescence as she makes her way through the last week of middle school. the end of her thus far disastrous eighth grade year.
Yes. Okay, this is crazy because I was in eighth grade when this movie came out, but like we were just talking, like I'm so glad I watched this like later in life, because I think so many of the things I would have like how the characters act, I would have like rolled my eyes at it or
no,
like
I was thinking that
it. Yeah,
I was like, there's no way this could be real if I had watched that when I was younger.
I'd be like, this is so inaccurate. Like, I don't act like this.
I've never felt any of that before. And now, like, watching it back, I'm like, oh my god, that was me.
No, it literally was.
Like, be nice to your parents, guys. Yeah. Like, don't be mean to your parents.
Oh my god. The way she was, like, treating her dad. Oh, I was like, but that's, like, how you act at that age. And it's, like, so painful to watch back, like, knowing, like, I don't know, like, just be nice to your parents. They just, like, worry about you. And, like, her dad was just worrying. But this is actually a biographical film based off of Bo Burnham's struggle with his anxiety, mostly with his, like, stand-up comedy, which is so interesting because he chose, like, this world of, like, being in eighth grade and being, like, a 13-year-old girl, like, as his, like, vessel, I guess, of, like, I don't know, demonstrating his anxiety.
Honestly, that's probably why it feels so real, because it's based on his own experience.
He says in, like, an interview, if you want to be stuck in your own head worrying about your image and how the world perceives you, you either have to be a 25-year-old male comedian or any 13-year-old girl, you know? Which is so real, like, I don't know. But he actually started writing his script in 2014 and was editing it, like, all up until they filmed the movie, which released in 2018. Which I feel like just shows like how much he put into this.
And I just want to say huge shout out to Elsie Fisher for doing
such a good job
portraying an eighth grade girl. I mean, something I really loved was that she looked like an eighth grader.
She looked so
acne,
the way she carries herself,
yes, exactly,
like
the way she carries herself. The choker. And just all the questionable outfit choices. It was like, okay, yep, this is an eighth grader.
And like that at the beginning, she's like watching like Olivia Jade and like putting on her makeup.
Oh my god, the YouTube video.
Kayla's Corner with a K.
I actually really love that the way they started the movie was like a direct to camera like video that she was filming, because it really made you like be drawn in and to what she was talking about.
I feel like you immediately like felt close to her and you immediately like sympathized with her.
You know, it's very personable, and I think those videos are one of the most important parts of the movie because it's like she's trying to understand herself by trying to help others. And she's also in a super low place throughout a lot of the movie. And maybe her videos make her feel like she's doing something useful.
It's such an honest and true, I think, way people are, because, I mean, for me personally, I'll find myself giving advice to people and then having it flipped back on me is so shocking, because I'm like, well, I would never take that advice myself, but I'm giving it out to people. And I just think another thing about her performance that's so great is she's like fumbling her words and talking over herself. And I think so much of the time, like performances we see on screen are so perfect. They're like not a word out of place, everything is perfect, but you're like, you're
that's
trying to follow
real.
It's not real at all, and you're trying to follow what she's saying, and she's messing up words, and I think it's just very truthful,
and she's always saying like like, you know, like stuff like that. And that's like so real, especially like for that time you're so like unsure of yourself. And I really appreciate the middle school representation, because I feel like no one talks about how hard that period of life is. Like, you're learning so much about yourself and, like, the social dynamics just, like, in the world. It's really cool to see.
And that's when stuff feels like it starts to matter.
Yeah.
But like, because I feel like when you're in those scenarios, it feels like life or death, mm-hmm. like end of the world, like some random eighth grade drama. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when you look back on it, you're like, oh, that was like ridiculous. Uh-huh. But like people never think about, like even people who experienced it themselves, and as adults, I feel like they don't think about what it felt like in the moment anymore.
I
think some of it for me was like hard to watch because it felt so close to
home. It feels like you're in the movie.
It really is. I'm like cringing, but at the same time, I'm questioning why I'm cringing because I was in that exact place in my life at that time. I mean, just the middle school assemblies.
Oh.
And this like school shooting simulation.
Oh, that was crazy.
And just like all the internet references. Like, oh my God, Bo Burnham, like I think the way he did this, he like watched a bunch of YouTube videos of like kids like like talking and like kind of like the videos that Kayla makes and like studied them. Which makes it, like, so realistic.
Isn't there that one kid that keeps going, like, LeBron James?
LeBron James. She's, like, doing BuzzFeed quizzes. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. We really did, like, grow up on the internet.
We absolutely did. And I think sometimes people are always like, oh, film shouldn't be dated. They shouldn't have, like, references from a time period. But I think the movie's kind of perfect because it exists in, like, 2018. And I think, like, for us looking back, we're like, oh, my God, that all happened. And we were on the internet, and we heard those references, and we know exactly what she was talking about.
This is actually so interesting because I was trying to figure out how these two movies kind of connect. Someone on Letterboxd said about Juno, it's so 2000s quirky that it almost feels like a period piece. But I feel like the same way with 8th grade. Like, it feels like a period piece of, like, 2018. Like, that whole era of, like just being on the internet and being, like, insecure and, like, trying to fit in and be cool and, yeah.
No, because I feel like people, like, from the 90s and maybe people in, like, 10 years won't get that movie. I think it's a super, like, specific time period where those social dynamics exist.
Yeah. And both films actually have really beautiful scenes with the protagonist and their father. Like, both girls, I mean, in 8th grade, it was at the fire pit, and Juno, it was just when she was asking her dad whether...
Well, you know, and then in 8th grade, she doesn't have a mom.
Yeah.
Which is... Which is, I feel like navigating teen, like, adolescence as a girl with no mom must be hard.
Yeah, the father-daughter relationships, for sure, are, like, very central in both of those movies. And I feel like in both of these movies, like, the protagonist kind of accepts, like, her awkwardness or, like, her out-of-placeness, I guess. Like, I mean, Juno is physically out of place because she's pregnant. Like, you can't, like, hide that about yourself. And then, what's her name?
Kayla.
Like, just feels out of place. Which are, those parallels are very interesting.
Also, in 8th grade, the creepy guy in the car.
Oh, no.
That scene is, oh.
Oh, my God, that was hard.
That scene was hard to watch.
Yeah.
No, because there's a guy that's much older than her that seems like he's going to try to take advantage. And she just doesn't have the self-confidence to stand up for herself.
But she does.
Which is good.
She says, she screams no.
Yeah.
And I think something that's I found really interesting was nothing happened, but it was really traumatic. And I feel like a lot of times people only care if something happened, if something... really, really bad occurred, but she was still traumatized.
Yeah, you get the feeling, you know? That was really a hard scene to watch. But I think the way they did that was very, I don't know, it was a good way to handle it, I guess.
Yeah, they handled it with a sensitivity, which I appreciated. Yeah. But big shout out to Gabe also, the little boy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
Gabe.
Like, how could I forget about Gabe?
Such a cutie.
Yes. The way he had, like, all the sauces, like, laid out in rainbow order.
With the dino nugget. Yes.
No, that's also just so middle school.
Yes. And he was so respectful, and they were like finding common things they had in common.
Like Rick and Morty.
Yeah, Rick and Morty. And he was like, I've seen your videos. They're really good.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely adorable. So sweet. Unlike Aiden. I don't like Aiden.
Oh. Aiden's.
Oh my god, yeah. Aiden was a little jerk.
He was.
I think he definitely had an older brother or something.
Oh, for sure.
Some had to be like some older figure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, Aiden had a god complex.
Oh yeah. 100%.
And I love the way she stood up for herself against Kennedy.
Oh my god,
I think
yes.
Her name was Kennedy. Who was mean to her all year and all throughout middle school, and she, but it's honestly so real also because she didn't look up once.
Yes.
She was looking down at the ground and yelling.
Yeah, she didn't look up, and then she, I don't even think she finished her thought at the end. She kind of just was like, mm-hmm. and then she walked away.
But like I've rehearsed what I was gonna say to people who
absolutely
like, I always did it in the mirror, but I would never do it to her face, so it felt like very like cathartic almost.
Yeah. Because you rehearse it and it, you can never do it in person.
Never.
No, but then when she's at the pool party and she like can't be there, I don't know, because it shows how her, I don't know, it just shows a very common aspect of, because her anxiety is going to the point where she's not even comfortable like in her own skin.
Yeah, which I feel like at some point like everyone's been there, whether you're again like a 13-year-old girl or like a, I don't know, like grown man. You know. Yeah, I don't know. Any like thoughts to kind of wrap up our show here? We'll be back, not next week, but the week after that.
On October 30th, yes. All Hallows Eve.
Yes, All Hallows Eve. Oh my god, that's crazy. Halloween is so close.
I gotta
get my costume. Yeah, okay, should we announce what movies we're watching next?
Definitely.
Okay, ready? Should we do like a
Drum roll.
Okay, next week we're watching Thanksgiving and Halloween.
Halloween from 1979.
Yes, and Thanksgiving from 2021? 2022? Let's see. 2023! Oh my god. yeah, both great slasher movies-ish. So tuned for that if you'd like.
And watch along with us if you also want to watch.
Yeah. I would recommend... Oh, should we rate what we gave these movies?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, wait. Let me find it. Let me pull it up.
I can start. Okay. I think I gave Juno 5 because I love that movie so much. And I gave 8th grade 4.5, I believe.
I did the exact same.
I gave Juno a 4. And I gave 8th grade a 4.5, which went up because the first time I watched 8th grade, I only gave it a 4, but this time I gave it a 4.5 because it deserves it.
The first time I watched it, I gave it a 3.5, which is crazy. I've really, like, grown to love it, I guess. But stay tuned. Next, we have Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. If you'd like, stay tuned for that. And, yeah, are we... Any last words?
We'll see you guys in 2 weeks or...
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Bye. Thank you.
Look out now. This is the Diz. Dizzy Gillespie, that is. And let me give you some information. If you want to hear some good sounds, the sounds that's round, keep your radio tuned to KDVS in Davis, 90.3 on your FM dial. Look out. Ow! This is Diz signing off.
Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station on a Wednesday afternoon. Today on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, we will feature, as we often do, interviews with two different poets, both of whom will be reading tomorrow evening at the John Nitzulis Gallery, 521 First Street here in the city of Davis, as part of the Poetry Night Reading Series. We will have on the radio show Tim Hunt. He is a Calistoga-born poet who grew up in Sebastopol and since then has been learning at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, and teaching all over the country. He's recently retired. He's the author of 5 books of poetry, and he'll be our featured poet tomorrow evening. We will also hear from Michael Galloglass. Michael's been on this radio show many times before, and he is a multi-genre author who has MFAs in fiction and poetry, and he'll be opening for Tim Hunt. We've got both these poets on the radio show today, so I hope you'll stick around for that. This show is produced by Dyson Smith, who's traveling today. I believe Dyson is in Savannah, Georgia. I don't think he's there for political reasons. I think he's giving a presentation at a conference. We'll have to get an update from Dyson at some point on some future episode of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. But for right now, we'll be right back with Tim Hunt after this.